Hello, and welcome to No Whiskey for Baby, where we pour a drink and figure out how to be parents. I'm Josh.
I'm Cassie.
We are, by your request, drinking a little beverage known as an After Five.
Yeah, my parents were grown-ups in the 80s and the 70s, but also in the 80s. And so this drink was something that they taught me when I was, I think, in college. They showed me this drink. And it's Bailey's and Kahlua and peppermint schnapps.
Yeah.
Shaken over ice. And It's delicious.
Our version is sans Kahlua, but it does have a homemade coffee liqueur made by yours truly, which I think is pretty tasty.
It's good. It tastes very good.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers. I think next time, less peppermint schnapps.
Yeah.
But it is a really tasty drink.
Yeah. It's like a wonderful little treat of a drink.
Yeah. I was looking up recipes for it because they were trying to figure out the ratios because I've made one before, but sad in my parents' basement alone is how I've made one before. Not like, you know, and I've never really cared. Or I've had my dad make one for me.
You say sad in the basement, but they have a full-on built into the house bar in the basement. So it's not like a...
Well, it's not a basement.
It's the downstairs of the house.
I was trying to paint a picture, but I guess you're not going to let me paint that picture.
You were downstairs and sad. You were downstairs and down.
Normally I have my dad make this for me. My butler.
And he knows. He's an old pro.
Yeah.
At the After Five.
Yeah. But we accidentally curdled the first one. So we're looking That's up how to do it. What's the one? The peppermint schnapps brand.
Rumplemints.
Yes, Rumplemints.
That's how you're saying that?
Yep.
All right. Enough schnapps talk.
Schnapps chat?
Yeah. Schnapps rhetoric. Rumplemints rhetoric. There it is.
I was like, what? Why did you go from schnapps chat to schnapps rhetoric?
My bad.
That's not good. That's way worse.
Enough Rumplemints rhetoric. So why don't we get into This Week in Finn? So what? Finn is about to be 5 months, right?
Yep. Next Monday? What is time?
Friday is the 25th, so...
Oh, next Friday is the 25th. So I was like, no.
No, not this Friday.
No. That would be Christmas. It's not Christmas yet. Next week is Christmas. Next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So he'll be 4.5 months old.
Yeah, I feel like he's been doing a lot more of like reaching for things very specifically.
Yeah.
Like today he reached for you when I was holding him, which was a first.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I was like, he likes me. He also like reaches for things. I got him, so on like a whim, I was looking at a subscription box of Montessori toys.
Uh-oh.
We did not purchase it. Don't worry. Mostly because I was like, this is very stupid for like the price. So I won't say it's very stupid. I think that there are a lot of parents who, when they have a child, they like flounder and they're like looking for the best options for their kid, and they've never really even been around a child before, and so they're like, please give me the appropriate toys. And if you don't have people who are giving you a bunch of toys, if you don't have like, we inherited so much stuff, and like people gave us so much stuff. That like,
and we know a lot of people that want to buy things for the baby.
Yeah,
but some people don't have those people in their life.
Yes, and also there is something to be said for really nice like wooden Montessori toys. They're very expensive, but they're nice, and babies really do love them. But you know, also, I'm not gonna make us drop like $50 every couple months for 4 toys in the mail. Like, that doesn't really make sense for us. But I was looking at it, and one of the things that was in the box for the month, for this month, like the 4 to 5 month, I think, was a box that had tissues in it, like a magic tissue box. And I said, that's very cute. I wonder if that's a thing. Like, you know, when I've worked in daycares, that's never been a thing that we've had. because I think that those pieces just get lost immediately. And like even hours played with by one child, like some of the tissues are already so gross because of his drool that I imagine that like.
That's another thing. Everything that he can get his hands on right now goes into his mouth.
It's wet.
To be drooled upon.
His mouth is so wet.
Yeah.
But he loves that tissue box. I went on Amazon and got a magic tissue box, and he loves it. He is.
So for those who are not familiar, I was not familiar at all when I heard that we had a magic tissue box on the way. I said, what is that? Why?
Magic.
Why are we giving the baby paper, Kleenex? What?
No.
It's a little box with nice art on it. That has
ours is Eric little, Carl.
That's true.
Yeah.
Of Hungry Caterpillar fame.
I will say I take issue with the Hungry Caterpillar.
Uh-oh.
You know why.
Yes. Because you every time you read the book, you correct it pointedly. Not that the child knows, but.
I know.
Yeah.
It bugs me when there's false information in books, especially for children.
Why don't you say what the false information is?
Well, they say that the caterpillar goes into a cocoon and becomes a butterfly. And no, the caterpillar can go into a chrysalis and become a butterfly, or the caterpillar can go into a cocoon and become a moth. But the caterpillar cannot go into a cocoon and become a butterfly, because that is not how that works.
Are you good?
Yeah, I also have a problem with the pout fish.
Right. Yes. Well, we can get into that another
anyway,
day.
Anyway, so the Eric Carl tissue box.
Yeah, it's a little, box. I think it is cardboard, but it's not like a disposable cardboard box, but a nice little box with a plastic top on it.
That I take off.
The top is pointless. It pops off anyway, or falls off. But it's full of little squares of fabric. Different textures and weights of fabric.
Most of them are crinkly
or like, you know, have different, yeah, they have like ridges on one of them or little bumps on another one. That's it.
Yeah.
Just little squares of fabric in a box, and it is the best thing he's ever seen in his life.
Yeah. And it's also I think the big thing is that he is also kind of sitting up on, with very little assistance at this point.
Yeah.
He'll sit like in the boppy. Like sit up, and he will use it kind of to stabilize himself.
It keeps him from just falling left or right every once in a while, but not keeping him.
Yeah, up, but he's sitting.
Yeah,
he's sitting on his own, without the tripod. Like he's not putting his hands in front of him to hold himself. He's like sitting.
Yeah,
he like falls over sometimes, but he is sitting. So he's able to like sit and pull things out of his tissue box. And then I put everything back in the tissue box, and he does it again.
Yeah.
It's very cute.
He loves it.
Yeah.
And as we were saying, a lot of those quote-unquote tissues go into his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
To be slobbered upon.
Immediately.
Yeah. So, Cassie, what did you stress search this week, most recently?
I'm actually changing what I was going to told you I was going to do.
Oh, my God. A peek behind the curtain. We talked about this before.
We did. But I actually, the thing I stress searched most recently is how to get rid of a breast duct clog.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Luckily.
That was today.
Yeah, that was today. Luckily, I ordered a Hakka. $13 on Amazon. It's a
traditional, like, Pacific Islander.
Yeah, I ordered Jason Momoa doing the Hakka. That's what I did. No.
Honestly, that's for both of us.
I mean, that would be for both of us. That would be great for everyone.
Yeah.
I did not do that.
All right.
The Hakka is it's a breast pump that's silicone, but it's just like a handheld breast pump. People use it to like kind of take the edge off of engorged breasts. Very hot, guys. But I had a clog in...
People don't come to a parenting podcast for sex appeal.
No, but it is, like, it's especially not hot. Like, it's,
sure.
Like, ugh. But I had a clogged duct, and it was very painful. It reminded me of how painful breastfeeding was at the beginning. And I was reading that what you can do is you can get some Epsom salts, put it in the haka, and like soak your boob in the haka and the Epsom salts and water. I'm not really sure about the mechanics of that, but I was stress searching about how to get rid of this stupid freaking, like, how hard my boob was. But in the end, is this, I don't know if this is TMI, y'all, but I did end up working it out by just shoving my fingers on it really hard until my breast duct just squirted out like a hose. So that was fun. Did that a couple times. It was very aggressive. And then I had to change my clothes. And, but now my boob feels better.
There you go.
So that's all that really matters.
Yeah. My most recent stress search, and I didn't tell you about this actually, was so, you know, when you're putting his, you know, when you're putting clothes on the baby.
Indeed.
And you're putting his arms through the sleeves. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes he'll have his little hand and a little fist.
Uh-huh.
So it's like going through the sleeve fine.
Uh-huh.
And then he opens his hand.
Did you think he broke his fingers?
I bent his thumb back a little bit before. Well, because it happened so fast. But it, so it like his thumb caught and it was obviously fine because he didn't react at all. If he
didn't react, then it's fine.
And it was obviously not like actually hurt, but it just got me thinking.
Freaked you out?
Yeah. And it got me thinking about like, does that happen to people?
Does it?
I don't think it has happened to, I'm sure it has happened to someone, but I could not find it on the internet. I
mean, think about your own thumb. You don't, and our tendons are much less flexible than his are.
Right.
And like, if you,
there's a lot of things that are going to like move and bend before.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was okay. Nothing happened.
Oh, good.
I was the one that was not okay. Cause I had an image in my head of me breaking my kid's fingers.
Oh, God.
Moving right along. Our main topic for this episode is sleep.
Yeah.
Sleep training, baby sleeping, parents sleeping, shut eye, catching Z's, other names and phrases that refer to sleep. So why don't we start with...
Wait, can I first tell you that after we decided to do this, I saw that TikTok that made my head explode?
Yes.
So it's one of... I don't even know who this girl is. I didn't... I commented on it, but I didn't like it, so I can never find it again. But this girl, this like college student, took like Psych 101 and wrote her final paper on why... try it out methods for sleep training. Why sleep training your child will break your child. And referred to a study, which we're going to talk about later, out of Sweden, that proves that fact. And the comments on it were insane. Like, people were, like, there were some people who were like, you know... It was very interesting because I've honestly, there are a lot of people who are like, well, you know, let's not shame people. And then like a lot of young people who don't have children were commenting back to those other people being like, it sounds like you have a lot of guilt. It sounds like you have a lot of guilt there, mom. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. Well, honestly, the fact is, of course, I have a lot of guilt. Everybody has a lot of guilt. That is part of being a parent, is you have a lot of guilt. But also, I would caution any young person to not make sweeping judgments about parenting decisions when you yourself are not a parent. Similar to like how you wouldn't make sweeping statements about how you're abusing your child, you know, when what you're doing is not considered abuse by any stretch of the imagination. So
that was This Week in Controversial TikToks.
But it was about sleep training. So
yeah.
But like, yeah, we had decided we were going to do sleep training, and then that TikTok popped up and I was like, whew,
yeah.
Well, we certainly did sleep train Finn.
So why don't we start with our routine when he was a newborn?
Okay.
Because I know that's something that's very different, I think, from, you know, couple to couple, how they handle getting up in the middle of the night and putting the baby back to sleep and all that.
And even where the baby is.
Yes. Also that, whether it's a bassinet next to the bed or in the crib, or I don't know what other, I don't actually know what other situations
some
there
people
are.
Co-sleep. Some people put a bassinet, people, there's like a bunk-a-tot that you can like clamp onto the side of your bed.
Was that a word? What'd you just say?
Bunk-a-tot.
Bunk-a-tot?
I don't know. I think that's what
bunk-a-tot.
What's...
Can you spell that for me?
I don't know.
First thing that came up is buck-a-tot, meaning in Tagalog.
No.
So I don't know. I don't know if you're. Are you from the Philippines?
No. It's a dock-a-tot.
Dock-a-tot.
Dock-a-tot. That's what it is. Oh,
like
no.
To dock a tot, like a baby.
I was thinking bunk beds. Oh, no. Anywho, dock. You can do a dock-a-tot that attaches to your bed. You can put a crib, you can put a bassinet next to your bed. You can leave the crib in your bedroom, or you can have a crib in a room that is not the room that you sleep.
Just so you know, the word you said in Tagalog means hoop net.
Hoop net.
Hoop net.
Hoop net.
Yeah. So.
Like a basketball hoop?
Let's see. All I got is hoop net.
Like how to catch a butterfly?
Maybe, yeah. It's probably a fishing. I would guess a fishing situation.
Great. Let's move on from my not word. some pediatrician, actually, I think most pediatricians recommend that you keep the baby in your room. Well, some pediatricians say that you should keep the baby in your room for the first 6 months.
Okay.
We did not
whether
do
that's,
that.
Whether that's...
in a crib, in a bassinet, in whatever.
But in the same room.
In the same room. We did not do that for many reasons, but mostly because of the shape of our room would not have allowed for that to really be the case.
Yeah. We don't have... I mean, we have enough room to have a bassinet next to the bed, but nothing bigger than that. And also, the nursery is directly off of our bedroom.
Yeah. So if you open the door to our bedroom, you are in the nursery. There's no hallway between our bedroom.
Well, there's two doors. Yeah. There's the door into the bedroom and then there's the door into the nursery.
We live in a railroad.
Yeah.
So it's the next room down.
The nursery is essentially the last room in the railroad of the apartment.
Yes. And so with the door open, it's ostensibly the same room. But we actually never used a bassinet for him to sleep in. We always put him in the crib.
Yeah, from day one from being in the apartment, because day one of his life, we were still in the hospital. But
yeah.
From day one, we put him in the crib.
Yes. Which, crib, no anything in there except for just a crib sheet, obviously.
Right. I know. They used to do bumpers and cribs and stuff like that, right?
Yes. I mean, like, a long time ago, they put blankets in cribs. And they used to put kids to sleep on their tummies.
Right.
Which was a leading cause of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, for the non-initiated. So there was a big old campaign right around the time we were born, Josh, that was called Back to Sleep. So people were putting children to sleep on their backs, and then they realized that they weren't crawling as early, which doesn't matter at all, because eventually children will all learn to walk and will all learn to, you know, not all, some people don't walk, but children who are going to learn to walk will learn to walk. But they ended up doing back to sleep, front to play, which is where tummy time originated. My mom did not do tummy time with me. Because that was not a thing in 1991.
Right.
Anyway, so yes, on your back, just a crib sheet, nothing in the crib.
Yeah.
And that's what was recommended by the hospital. We have a bassinet attachment for our fancy stroller, and we put him in there for strolling, and we were thinking about using it for sleep.
Because you can get a stand.
Or you can literally just roll the stroller in there.
Sure. Yeah. That also works.
Yeah. But in the end, that didn't really seem like it made a lot of sense.
Again, because the crib is so close to the bed anyway.
Yeah, except for if you have a C-section, then it's very far away.
Right. So, yes, you had a C-section, which made going from laying to sitting up to standing very difficult and very painful.
Near impossible to do with any kind of speed.
Which influenced our nighttime routine before sleep training.
Yeah.
Which was, it ended up being, what were you calling it?
Daddy delivery system?
Yeah.
Daddy delivery system.
Daddy delivery service?
Oh, yeah. Daddy delivery service is what I used to call it. Because the first night, we tried to switch off. Right. That you would get up and then I would get up.
Which I think is like the classic. Or at least that's what you hear.
Yeah. I don't really get it. If I'm breastfeeding, what the hell are you going to do with the baby if he needs to eat every couple hours anyway? What's the plan here? I guess maybe some
people would pump or...
You're not supposed to pump that early. I mean, there are some people who do have to pump because, like, if you have a preemie, you need to, like, triple feed. But you're not supposed to pump normally that early because it teaches your breasts that they need to produce more milk than they need to. So you're supposed to not pump so that you can regulate the amount of milk that you're producing. Yeah. Anyway, so we tried that literally for the first two feedings of the first night. And then Josh found me, practically crying in the living room because I couldn't sit up in the bed.
I don't even remember that.
Oh.
Did that happen?
Yeah. You found me in the living room. I had the baby and I was, like, wandering. He was crying and you were like, what are you doing? And I was like, I can't get up onto the bed and hold him at the same time because, like, I couldn't get into the bed without support of my arms. So I had to feed him. I hadn't figured out how to feed him in any way other than reclined at that point because I was, I just had a C-section. So, like, I was just, like, upset and on the couch and you were like, let's figure out another way.
Yeah. So for the entire, the entirety of you healing until you were feeling better.
The first month.
Yeah. I was getting up every time he cried and bringing him to you.
Yeah.
And then falling asleep. Mm-hmm. And then when it was time, putting him back in the crib.
Yeah.
Which might sound like a nightmare for some people, but I am a person who can immediately fall back asleep.
Yeah.
Of course, it was still like...
I mean, neither one of us were sleeping very much.
Right. It's a different night's sleep when you're waking up constantly, but I wasn't, like, kept awake. I would, like, give you the baby, I would lay down and pretty much fall right back asleep, for however long, 10, 20 minutes, however long the feeding was, and then wake up, put him in the crib, and then fall right back asleep.
Then it was longer. He used to feed for a lot longer.
Right.
It was, like, at least 20 minutes.
I was asleep.
Sometimes half an hour. So you were getting up each time. And you didn't get me up every time. Sometimes he didn't need food. Sometimes he was just...
Sometimes he just needed to be soothed back to sleep.
Yeah.
But, I could always tell because he would either start pecking or, like, trying to suckle on my arm, like on my bicep, if he was hungry.
Yeah. No, I remember when he was that little.
He was very small.
He was so little.
Yeah.
He's not that little anymore.
No, he's... growing very long.
He's so long. he's very long. I don't know how a child of mine is so long.
Yeah.
But yes, now his feeding cues are very different. Now he folds in half.
Yeah, what's that all about? I started doing that recently.
Because I'll like stand him in front of me and he will fold himself in half going for my boob.
Yeah.
Now he can communicate better. So that's what it is. He's learning that there's other ways to communicate other than just like just instinct. He's communicating now, not just using his instincts. So,
yeah.
Which is very fun. So that was the first month. Honestly, was that the first 2 months? Is that how we did it until we started sleep training?
I'm trying to remember. now, because I feel like that's what we did.
I think that's what we did.
Yeah.
Which might sound insane.
But he also, even before sleep training, he started to sleep for pretty long stretches.
Yeah.
Like, that first month was maybe every, 2 hours or whatever. But then he started to go, like, 4 hours.
Pretty quick. By around 4 weeks, he was going, like, 4 or 5 hours at a time.
Yeah.
At night. And until around 1 month, he transitioned to 2 feedings, I think, at night, or like 2 waking up at night, like once at like midnight and once at 3 in the morning. And so both of those, I think that for that time, this is what it was. When he would cry, both of us would wake up and I would be awake for the duration of the baby crying. If Josh could put the baby to sleep quickly, he was awake for 30 seconds longer than I was, because the baby would stop crying, the baby would go back to sleep, Josh would put the baby back in bed, he would walk back over to bed, he would immediately fall asleep.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. That's good. That's what made the system work. Yeah. And if the baby needed food, Josh would wake up, I would be awake, he would walk the baby over to me, he would fall back asleep, I would sit up in bed, I would feed the baby, and then bring the baby, and then by around 1 month, 1.5 months, I would just walk over myself, because at that point I was pretty fully healed.
Yeah.
No longer in pain at all. Yeah. That's what it was. You stopped bringing him back.
Right.
I would be awake for a lot of it regardless. You would just do more of the walking. Which also worked. You weren't working for the first part of this too. So, and neither was I. So we could sleep more.
I've said this a couple times, like talking to people about having a baby during, the pandemic and COVID and everything. And like the column of terrible, awful things about this year is huge. That list is very long, obviously, like loss of life and the state of, certain people's financial situation, all of that, like, terrible. But if you, ignore all that for a second and think about the little positives about at least our situation was that we were both home and didn't have to worry about going anywhere. So, like, even if we were getting no sleep, it wasn't like either of us had to wake up and go to work.
Yeah.
Or go anywhere, because we shouldn't have been going anywhere because it's a pandemic. So
yeah, there was no pressure for us to go visit anyone or anything, but
so like even when the baby woke up at 6 a.m. or whatever, you would feed him and we could all go back to sleep.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you would have taken off time if you had kept your job.
Yeah.
Probably with the C-section, you would have taken 3 weeks. But it was really nice to have you for longer, because it was really hard recovering from that C-section. I felt better after 3 weeks, but I didn't feel completely better.
No.
It's major frickin' surgery.
Yeah. You could move a little bit better, but things were still sore. Things were still moving back into place. Things were still tender.
Yeah. Anyway, sleeping. Around 2 months is when our pediatrician, and now this is not what every pediatrician says. In fact, our pediatrician is, they practice earlier sleep training than most doctors do. We go to Tribeca Pediatrics, and they have one of their hallmarks is that they recommend sleep training at 2 months. Yeah. Because sleep training a baby at 4 months, from their perspective, is really, really hard. Because by that point, the baby has habits and has opinions and has routines. And if you're trying to break those at that point, it becomes much more difficult. That's their opinion. And yeah. For us, their literature and some of their doctors recommend termination, which is a style of...
Every time I hear it, it sounds like Sounds like you're going in like with like a weapon and threatening the child.
Yeah, no. In fact, you don't go anywhere with anything.
Right.
The idea with termination is you put the baby to sleep at 7 o'clock or 7:30. Like, you do your whole bedtime routine. You close the door. And then you don't open the door again until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Before you close the door, you look at the baby and you say, I'll be back. This is termination. All right, that was the podcast this week, folks.
But yeah, we didn't do that. That's not what our specific pediatrician recommended that we do. Our pediatrician, who we love, recommended that we do something. That's his method.
Isn't termination also called cry it out?
No, cry it out is an umbrella term for many different.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So cry it out encompasses the Ferber method and termination and the graduated Ferber method and the graduate, you know, there's lots of different types of cry it out methods.
Yeah.
And we did some cry it out. So what we did was we did the nighttime routine, started that nighttime routine at 7:30 as per the request of our pediatrician, bath time, and then reading to, and then pajamas, and then you read a book, and then you nurse, and you sing a song, and then you put the baby to bed. And then you let the baby, and then the baby will fall asleep sometimes. And if the baby doesn't fall asleep and the baby is crying, you let the baby cry for the first couple, I think for the first month, it was between 10 and 15 minutes we let him cry. And then we would go in, we could,
I think it was 10.
10 minutes the first for the first bit. Yeah. I think he said between 10 and 15, and we just did 10.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was.
You could go in, you could like rock him back to sleep, you could sing him a song, you could nurse him, you put him back to sleep until 11 p.m.
Well, it was, if it was before 11 p.m., if he was hungry, you could feed him.
Yes.
So you'd go in, do all those things you said, you know, soothe him, mm-hmm. whatever. And if he was hungry, feed him.
Mm-hmm.
After 11 p.m., if he wakes up, and we're using he because our child is...
Is he.
Is he. If he wakes up after 11, go in, soothe him, put him back to sleep, but don't feed him.
Yes. And that's to get his stomach on... That's what he said, is to get his stomach on to our schedule. Like, you want him hungry during the day and not at night, because that's how humans consume food. Fair.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you get a midnight snack, but that is not the norm for most people, I guess. You shouldn't teach children to need midnight snacks.
No.
And what happened for us was, and like we said, he was already sleeping between 4 and 5 hours. And at that point, he was waking up once at 3 a.m., That was when, at 2 months, he was waking up once at 3 a.m. And we were feeding him at 3 a.m. And we transitioned to not feeding him at 3 a.m. And when we didn't feed him at 3 a.m., he just didn't wake up after that. He, like, I mean, he might have woken up, but he didn't cry. He just, like, put himself back to sleep and he was fine.
Yeah. It was, like, after the first or second night.
It was after the first time. Like, yeah, the first time he woke up and he didn't get food, the next night he didn't wake up. It was like, wild.
I'm not going to... There's no food?
Okay, never mind.
I'm going to keep sleeping.
Yeah.
That's, what do you think I am, dumb?
We lucked out.
We did, yeah.
And he does sometimes still fuss. We sometimes need to, like, let it... At this point, we let him cry it out for 25 minutes. That's how long we're supposed to let him cry for. If he wakes up and cries, that's what our pediatrician has given us. He so rarely cries for that amount of time.
Yeah. First of all, he rarely wakes up in the nighttime these days. And if he does, he puts himself back to sleep before we have to go in there.
Yeah. Normally less than 2 minutes of him crying, if he cries at all.
So that's definitely not.
That's not the case for everyone.
And I don't know if that's it's hard to say what a common experience is, because everyone's experience is so different. From other people I've talked with, friends and acquaintances that have had kids, they have not had that experience.
I will also say that I am a self-labeled rule follower.
Yeah.
Like, and our child, like, we also have a child who was sleeping pretty well. I know that it is near impossible to follow those rules, especially if you have a child who is crying and you can hear them crying and, like, you're freaking out because, like, you don't want your kid to cry and it makes you sad and upset. It's very hard to listen to your kid cry.
Yeah.
For any amount of time. So I think a lot of parents don't follow those rules because it's so difficult. And it just, like, if it makes you that upset, then it's not worth doing.
Yeah.
Honestly.
But yeah, we kept it consistent and we stuck to the schedule that our pediatrician gave us. And mm-hmm. for us, it worked out swimmingly.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we're very lucky, but also I think it's a mix of luck and, you know, just being stubborn enough to follow those rules. And, you know, he also, you know, he hasn't had any, like, because there's also, you know, some babies are, you know, colicky or they have some sort of reason why they're waking up. They're not just upset or hungry. Like, there could be, you know, some other extenuating medical factor.
Yeah. There's lots of reasons why babies wake up. Lots of reasons why babies cry at night. Probably most babies wake up and cry because they want attention and they, like, look, I, and even saying that.
They've also been so used to not, like their, you know, quote unquote routine has been that they're only alone for a couple of hours at a time. Right.
Yeah. Especially like when they're newborns.
Yeah.
I sometimes think that my postpartum depression helped with the sleep training.
Why is that?
Because when he would cry, this is going to sound terrible. Okay. I love my baby.
Of course.
I especially, like, now when he cries, like, now that I'm past those baby blues, he cries and I'm like, I don't want to listen to him cry at all for any amount of time period in discussion. But, like, at the beginning, sometimes he would cry and I'd be like, jeez, I just want to sleep. I am in so much pain.
Yeah.
Like, you were recovering. Please just fall back asleep, baby. I believe in you. You can do it. Yeah. So perhaps the depression made it so that it was easier to sleep train.
Maybe.
So I would recommend having postpartum depression if you want your baby to sleep.
No Whiskey for Baby does not officially endorse.
Not postpartum spawn.
Depression. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts are their own. They're not affiliated with the podcast.
No. It's a joke. Postpartum depression sucks. It's very, very upsetting. Obviously, there is no don't have it.
Right.
But, like, you know.
If you have it, it's fine. Get through it. But
get help. Yes. If you realize.
Ask for help. There's nothing wrong with asking for help.
No.
And talking about how you're depressed.
Yes.
I have an article here. Myths about sleep training. This specific article is from NPR and WNYC. So shout out.
Big That's fans. Our member station.
Big fans.
They don't need our money. It's WNYC.
No. It's called Sleep Training Truths, What Science Can and Can't Tell Us About Crying It Out. Great article. I recommend reading the whole thing.
I love science.
I figured we could go through and talk about the myths and facts here.
Go ahead.
Myth. Sleep training is synonymous with the cry it out method. Fact. Researchers today are investigating a wide range of gentler sleep training approaches that can help.
Great. Yeah. So cry it out can mean lots of different things.
Yes. And also there are lots of different methods of sleep training that are not quote unquote cry it out.
Yeah.
That's great.
And there's also I would also say that, and this is just my opinion, when you say gentler, I feel like you know, babies cry a lot of the time. Like, that happens. Babies cry. I think that the people who need the gentleness are the parents. It's very, like I said, it's very, very difficult to hear your baby cry. So.
Yeah. Myth. There's a right amount of time to let your baby cry when you're trying to sleep train. Fact. There's not a strict formula that works for every parent or baby.
Yeah. But, like, I think that probably the trick is to stick to something, right?
Yes. Yeah. It says here, there's not a magic number of minutes that works best for checking on a baby after you've put them down. Depends on what parents feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if you come back and check on the baby every 30 seconds or whether you come back every 5 minutes. This doctor says, if it's your first child, you're going in every 20 seconds. But by the third, 10 minutes of crying may not seem like a lot, she jokes.
That's, yeah.
You have to figure out what works best for you, your family, and the baby's temperament. Myth.
Mm.
It's not real sleep training if you don't hear tons of crying. Fact. Gentler approaches work too, and sometimes nothing works.
Yeah.
Scientific literature suggests all the gentler approaches, such as camping out and parental education, can help most babies and parents get more sleep, at least for a few months.
I've heard that camping out isn't as useful. So
camping out is when you go and sleep next to the crib.
Yeah, basically, like, you stay with the baby until you, like, sit in the room with the baby until the baby falls asleep, but you don't go to the baby.
Right.
Like, you sit in the room while the baby cries.
So the baby can see you if it's looking for you, but...
But you're not going to pick the baby up.
Yeah.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Sounds worse.
First of all, that sounds way worse. Like...
As far as, like, if you don't like hearing your baby cry...
If you don't like hearing your baby cry, and also if, like, I'm just, like, imagining this from the baby's perspective, which is that you are wailing, and you're looking at your mom, and she's not going to pick you up.
Yeah.
Like, she's just looking at you while you're screaming. That seems, like, I mean, good God. Look, whatever works for you, but that seems like it would not work for me. It sounds like I wouldn't be able to do that personally. Yeah. And also the literature that Tribeca Pediatrics gave us said that, you know, that can be confusing for a baby. But there are so many studies and there are so many different methods. And by, you know, at the end of the day, there aren't adults. Well, I say that there are plenty of adults who can't sleep through the night. I don't know if it has anything to do with their parents not sleep training them.
There are plenty of other things that could factor in there. Yeah, just some of the quotes here. There's a popular belief that cry it out is the fastest way to teach babies to sleep independently, but there's no evidence that's true. Parents are looking for what's the most effective method, but what that is depends on the parents and the baby. It's a personalized formula. There's no question about it.
That is not what the research I have read says at all.
Yeah?
Yeah, can you pass the crib sheet? So, from the sleep training chapter of Crib Sheet... Does sleep training work? Good news. Yes, this method works for improving sleep. There are many, many studies on this employing a variety of related procedures. Many of these are randomized trials. A 2006 review covered 19 studies of the unfortunately named extinction method. Oh, it's not termination, it's extinction.
Jesus.
Well.
Are we going to hit the baby with a meteor?
The form of cry it out in which you leave and do not return, of which 17 showed improvements in sleep. Another 14 studies used graduated extinction when you come in and check on the baby at increasing lengthy intervals, which is the Ferber method. A smaller number of studies covered extinction with parental presence, which is camp it out. And these also showed positive effects. These effects persist through 6 months or a year in studies that can look this far out. This means that children who are sleep trained are sleeping better on average even after a year after the training. These methods do not completely solve all sleep problems from day one, and some children respond better than others, as do some parents. To give an example, in one study of Cry It Out from the 1980s, the authors found that babies in the control group got up 4 nights a week on average versus only 2 nights for babies who were sleep trained. The sleep trained babies were also woke up less frequently on nights they did get up. These results are similar to other studies in their magnitudes. Not every baby who is sleep trained will sleep through the night every night, but they do sleep better on average.
This isn't saying that it doesn't work. It's saying that there's no like one most effective method, like blanket for everyone.
I don't know what that means. Like, until they can do a study where, it seems like with all these studies, everybody who stuck to a method had results.
I think that's the trick. I think it's just finding the method that you, the parents, can stick to. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter which one.
Yeah.
Because they all work as long as you stick to them.
But, like, saying that no one sleep method works for all babies, well, like, no. There are special circumstances, of course, but, like, if you want to sleep train your kid, you can probably do that, and yeah. It will probably be fine. So, I mean, this book also goes into, is Cry It Out method harmful, which there is a study that came out of Australia that says, Sweden, that says maybe, which is frustrating because... And they talk about the issues in the study. This is the study that everyone points to when they're like, you should never let your baby cry. And it's because they had parents do Cry It Out for 3 nights. And the first night, baby cried, mommy cried, and mommy cried, basically. Baby cried, mom cried, and everyone's cortisol freaking out hormones went up on night 1. On night 2, baby cried, mommy cried, same thing happened. Night 3, baby didn't cry, so mommy's cortisol levels did not go up at all, but baby's cortisol levels were still high.
But it's only 3 nights.
Yeah. They didn't do this study past 3 nights. And they didn't do any like longitudinal studies. This was not a randomized control trial, and they also didn't like check in to see any information about how these children did later in life. You know, the question is, like, does this destroy your, like, trust in humans? Like, does this make you not trust people? Because, you have stopped crying because you know that mom's not coming. Like, that's the thought, is that these babies that wake up and they don't cry, are they not crying because they have learned to self-soothe, or are they not crying because they have lost their faith in their mom, basically? And I say their mom because that's the language that was used in the study, I believe, but in their parent. And I would say no.
So just that doesn't seem like enough time because, 3 nights... Sure, yeah, the baby's probably still going to be stressed out even if it wakes up not crying because it's the first time it's waking up and figuring out how to self-soothe. But what about night 4 or night 5? What, like, that just seems... And I'm sure that the people who did that study aren't the ones saying that this ruins the kids for the rest of their lives. I'm sure it's people looking at that and then jumping to the conclusion they want.
Yes. There is a study that came out of Australia where they looked at 328 families that they recruited when they were 8 months old to see the differences between parents who sleep trained their kids and parents and babies who sleep trained and didn't. And they saw that if the babies were sleeping through the night and they sleep trained, they saw improved sleep and lowered parental depression. But that's not really the point of this study. They looked back a year later and then 6 years later and looked at the relationship between the parents and the children and looked at those children. And they didn't see any differences between the relationships And like the parent-child closeness, conflict, parent-child attachment, or attachment in general. Basically, the kids who were sleep trained looked exactly like those who were not. Is it possible that sleep training messes a person up like as an adult? Maybe. There's no studies that look into that.
Yeah.
But like the chances of that are pretty low.
Yeah.
Especially with these other studies that look into children as they get older to see if it affects them as adults or as older children, not babies. And if it's not showing any problems as a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old when you're like at your most id of human, like I cannot imagine that it would affect you as an adult when you have like a developed personality.
The last myth on here is sleep training or not sleep training, my children could harm them in the long term. Fact. There's no data to show either choice hurts your child in the long run.
Yes, that is.
And it cites the same Australia study that you were just talking about.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I would. So like if this is my take, this is my hot take. If you can stand it, you should do it. Because if you are sleeping, you are more present. You are more able to function during the day. And you are probably going to be like a more present person if you are having a night's sleep. I won't say good night's sleep because it might make you crazy that you're like, you know, checking on the baby monitor every couple hours.
You're still going to be waking up, you know, if you hear something or you're stressed out, but you're going to get more sleep than you would have.
But if you're able to get through it.
Yeah, it'll be better for your mental health. Like you said, it'll make you a more present parent. It'll make you a more patient person. And you'll be able to appreciate the bond between you and your kid more in those moments during the day. Because you'll be awake and alert and...
I mean, I don't want to say that. Like, you know, I don't want to say that people who don't sleep train their kids are not as appreciative of their bond with their children.
Yes.
I just... Yeah. I am a big proponent of a happy parent is a better parent. And if you are able... Like, if I personally... am not as good of a person when I don't sleep at night.
Right.
I am a worse person if I'm tired. So.
I guess that's what it is. Whatever makes you the happiest when it comes to sleep training or not sleep training is the route you should take.
Yeah.
Because like you said, that's going to make you a more present parent and it's going to make you appreciate the journey more.
You know, there's a lot of, and I'm sure that you can pick up on this from just listening to us talk. There's so much mom shaming. There's so much parent shaming that happens. And I say mom shaming because women do bear the brunt of the shame.
Of course.
But, you know, generally there's parent shaming when it comes to all of the things. You know, there's a lot of shame that comes with, like, do you sleep train your kid? Do you not sleep train your kid? Do you formula feed? Do you breastfeed?
Yeah.
You know, and it's when I'm part of a Facebook group for people in our neighborhood.
For parents.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody there is so kind and so nice and everybody does everything they can to not shame each other. But it can feel very much like walking on eggshells all the time because people are like, this is what felt best for me. I couldn't, you know, I wasn't ever going to say no to my baby wanting food from me because I couldn't, it made me feel bad. And like everybody always like, you know, affirms everything and they're like, you know, whatever makes you the happiest, of course.
Yeah.
But man, it's almost like, and this is the other thing I was telling you about, is as a teacher, I am a teacher. I have taught. There are, and in every profession, there are best practices, and then there are fine practices, and then there is stuff you do not do.
Right.
Right? And best practice is like this pie in the sky thing that you learn about. And then what you end up doing is whatever you end up doing that works best for you in the moment when you're teaching. And then there's stuff that you never do. So, like, you never shame a kid. You never hit a kid. You never, you know, there's lots of things you don't do. And then there's, like, best practice, which is, like, you always uplift and you never say no. And you, you know, never say, you never dismiss a child's comment out of hand. And, like, the, you know, the, you're always co-intentional, which is, like, this wonderful buzzword. And then there's, like, what you actually do in the moment, which yeah. is sometimes there are things that you have to do when you're in a classroom or as a parent that aren't, quote, best practice, end quote, but are what needs to happen to get the thing done, right?
Yes.
And I think that a lot of the time in parenting, people confuse best practice with, like, the difference between best practice and good practice and best practice and the stuff you should never do.
Right.
You know, people think about sleep training and they're like, you should, like, that idea of extinction, like, that is child abuse. Like, I have heard that said, that people think that the extinction method of sleep training is child abuse. We did not do the extinction method of sleep training, but that doesn't mean that we wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that anyone who does is abusing their child. And some people think that giving a kid whatever, like feeding a child whenever they want to and not sleep training a child is also abuse. And that is also not abuse. That is not what abuse is. Abuse is like letting your kid languish for, you know, a day in a crib without touching them like they did in the orphanages. And like that is abuse. Only picking the kid up to feed them and then putting them down. You know, that's abuse. But there is a lot of space in between there. There's a lot of daylight between that and all of these methods of sleep training. And I would caution anyone who wants to label any of that as abuse to not.
Yeah.
That's all.
It's an extremely varied and personal journey,
mm-hmm.
Becoming a parent and taking care of a kid. And I think you should, you know, seek education and advice and ask for help from people in your life. But if you so choose, if you so choose.
Yeah.
That's why I said, you know, you don't have to take it, but if you want to seek it out, seek it out. But don't let anybody's guilt or anything make you feel bad about your choices.
I think that the only person that you need to listen to is a pediatrician. And, like, if you have a partner, your partner. Pediatrician and partner are the only people who matter in this equation. Because, like, if your partner is deeply uncomfortable with the idea of sleep training, then you, like, if let's say you were like, we cannot sleep train this child. I will not listen to him cry for any amount of time. We would have to have a sit-down talk, and I'd have to be like, well, then you get to deal with him at night. I don't know what to tell you. Or, like, we would work together, and I would say, all right, well, then I'm putting aside my comfort for this because your comfort matters too. We'll make compromises in other ways for me later. Or if, you know, you talk to your pediatrician, and your pediatrician says, don't do this, like, don't do that, you know. And this other thing I'm going to say is a little controversial. I don't think going with your instinct on everything is the right move. People say, like, listen to your gut. Your gut's always right. Like, your parent intuition isn't always right. I mean, often it can be right. There are times where it is right. But, like, there is, like has been cited in many studies, there is nothing wrong with sleep training your child, and it does go against all your instincts. So don't always trust your instincts. Sometimes your instincts are bad. Think with your actual brain. Not to say that your instincts are always bad. Sometimes your instincts are great. But I know myself well enough to know that, like, sometimes my instincts are very bad.
Now, for a toast to all of the parents out there currently trying to figure out how to get as much sleep as they can while taking care of a newborn. Best of luck. You'll figure it out, and the kid is worth it.
Cheers. I'm going to do exactly your toast, but I'm gonna flip it up. You ready?
Uh-oh.
A toast to the parents who are trying to sleep train their kids right now. Not only is your kid worth it, but you are also worth it to be a better parent and sleep through the night if that's what you so choose.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That is it this week for No Whiskey for Baby. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out on all of our social medias, No Whiskey for Baby. Please rate and review the podcast. We would really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Get some sleep, and we'll catch you next time.
Cry for 25 minutes, and then someone can come and get you.
It's actually just a good tip for anyone that's not a baby. Just give yourself an amount of time to cry. Maybe every day.